From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you've been waiting for a copy of a new book to check out from your local library, you might have to wait longer than you planned. Libraries usually rely on suppliers to order books, and one of the major businesses that's handled that, Baker & Taylor, is shutting down in January. The company has been in business for almost 200 years, and its demise is leading libraries to find other ways to get new books, often from other distributors that are facing a significant surge in demand. Here to explain what's happening is Claire Woodcock. She's a journalist and writer whose major focuses are technology, education, and culture. She wrote about the effects of Baker & Taylor's shutdown in an article last week for the tech-focused news site 404 Media. Claire, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
We also wanted to hear from somebody working in Illinois libraries about what's happening. Sarah Stumpf is an adult collection management librarian at the Rockford Public Library. Sarah, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me on.
And listeners, in order to make our schedules meet, we spoke with Claire and Sarah yesterday afternoon. Because of that, no calls for this part of the show, but you can always let us know what you think about our program. The address is talk@21stshow.org. Again, talk@21stshow.org. All right, Claire, I'm going to start with you. What all did Baker & Taylor do for libraries beyond just, you know, sort of actually mailing the physical books out that they ordered?
Yeah, so Baker & Taylor had a lot of different types of tools that they and resources that they provided for library workers. When I was doing the reporting for this story, you know, every library worker I spoke with kind of had this favorite tool that like really changed the game of how they did their job. It's not always the case when you're talking about library workers and the vendors that they're working with. Not every vendor is, offers tools that actually librarians feel like they're improving their lives. But in this case, Baker & Taylor seems like very special in that regard. One of the things that the librarians I spoke with, they had their favorites, told me about their shelf readies and things like that. But one of the tools that came up the most was this Title Source 360. And the way I understand it, the platform was like really helpful for tracking and managing orders. One of the librarians specifically I spoke with from a public library system in a major city told me that she was especially helpful. It was especially helpful for recommending books that staff may not have otherwise heard of based on borrowing trends for certain branch locations. Another benefit I was told was that the platform was useful in determining how many copies of a book to purchase based on past checkout histories, how big that library branch was. So I think one thing that's important to point out here is that the software platforms libraries were working with Baker & Taylor, was that it provided them with tools that they actually restructured their workflows around that actually helped them do their jobs more efficiently. And I know right now there's a lot of library workers who have their fingers crossed that their favorite ordering interface is going to be bought during the liquidation process.
Sarah, let me bring you in and just talk about, you know, what, from your perspective, what difference did what Baker & Taylor did, what difference did that make in how you do your job?
The main thing to understand about Baker & Taylor, besides the fact that they were such a long-serving company that had such a track record, is their reach. I would say, you know, a ballpark 50% of American libraries were getting some form of service from Baker & Taylor, whether that was actually getting books from their warehouse, whether that was getting cataloging and processing services, whether that was other tools, things that, like, I can run reports that tell me which books are underperforming or what book should go to a different library branch because it's not working here, but we think it would work there. They had so many different types of services. So even if you weren't getting everything from Baker & Taylor, a lot of libraries in America were getting something from Baker & Taylor. They had their own ebook service. They sold talking children's books where it was like a picture book that you could read along, kind of like those old ones we had when I was a kid where it was like a cassette tape or a record or a CD that played with a book. They had their hands in so many different products that libraries and librarians use. For example, here in Rockford, we had completely outsourced all of our cataloging and processing to Baker & Taylor. So when I selected an adult book to purchase, what we got in the box, it already had the plastic jacket, all the stamps, it was barcoded, it was cataloged. We took it out of the box, we checked it in, and we gave it to people. It was shelf ready from the box. We don't have staff here that have the ability to catalog and process and stamp and put those plastic cover jackets. We didn't have people in-house that did that anymore. Baker and Taylor did that all for us. So their closure leaves us both without a book vendor, but quite frankly, I can buy books from anywhere. I mean, I could buy them from other library vendors. I could buy them from, you know, from Amazon. I could buy them from the local book independent bookstore up the street from us. But that's not going to get us to the point of being able to catalog all those books, of being able to do all the processing that takes a book from just being a book to a library book.
Yeah, I understand that even like something like putting that little plasticky, I don't know what you call that, the thing over the dust jacket, that there's like an art to that, yeah?
There's the plastic ones that go over the dust jacket. And then if you have ever had a paperback, you know, from your library and it's got that hard plastic, it's like a giant sticker that wraps, or clear sticker that wraps around it, so the paperback doesn't get all tatty and weird. Those things are a nightmare to put on. I mean, you're having to push out the air bubbles with these little things. It's a skill, and it's a time consuming skill that, you know, in the case of Rockford, we just didn't have the manpower, you know, the labor hours to easily be able to just pick up what Baker and Taylor had essentially dropped. Our models were all built around, if not Baker and Taylor doing all those things, doing most of them for us. And so that's been, it's been an interesting transition as we start to figure out how are we going to move forward without someone who's been doing so much for us.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're talking about libraries and particularly how they get the books you might borrow from a library. Turns out there is a firm that did that service for a lot of libraries, and not just distributing the books, but also, as we just heard, doing things like making paperbacks more durable through plastic covers and putting on barcodes and getting books ready to be not just the sort of ordinary book you might get from a bookstore, but the more robust and cataloged and trackable book that you would borrow from a library. We're talking about this with Sarah Stumpf, Adult Collection Management Librarian at the Rockford Public Library, and Claire Woodcock, who's a journalist who focuses on technology, education, and culture. She wrote about the effect of this company, Baker & Taylor, and their shutdown in an article last week for the tech-focused news site 404 Media. We pre-taped this conversation in order to meet everyone's schedule, so no calls, but you can let us know what you thought. Talk at 21stshow.org is the address. So, Claire, how did this company, right? We said it was almost two centuries old. How does it get to a point where it has to shut down?
Well, I mean, it happens in a few ways, I guess I would say. But one of the things that we noticed over at 404, my editor Emmanuel Mayberg and I, was we were noticing the social media posts that were coming from public libraries across the country that were just saying effectively, hey, we're having a bit of a major service disruption right now with the closure of our main distributor, Baker and Taylor, and we really appreciate your patience as we migrate over to a new distributor. And that's when we were like, okay, what happened here? If all of these like varying sizes and degrees of public libraries are all coming out and saying like, okay, this is going public and saying like, hey, something's not going right here. Like, we had to look into it. So what I found in my reporting is things have been rocky for a while for Baker and Taylor. I spoke with a few librarians who, you know, told me that there had been shipping delays and issues with the company for years. So they left and went over to one of the few other main players in the library book distributor space. And then one, the other thing is, like, they were also talking to me about, you know, there were accounts that hadn't been completely covered, like certain like publishers weren't necessarily getting paid. Basically, they've been financially struggling for a while, and then everybody sort of thought that there was a planned acquisition by a company called ReaderLink was going to go through. That company distributes books you might find in big box stores like Target and Walmart. And everyone kind of thought that this deal was going to go through after months, if not years, of it having kind of a rocky relationship with this company. But at the last hour, it fell through. And that is what we assume is the precipice for how this closure came about.
Sarah, did your experience with Baker & Taylor this year comport with any of that? Delays, anything else you've seen that was unusual leading up to this?
Yes and no. One of the things that, you know, to keep in mind is the book publishing world has been in a weird and volatile place since COVID. You've had supply chain issues. You've had the closure of some small presses. You've had more small presses being snapped up by the bigger publishing companies. Baker & Taylor was hacked at one point. It was a ransomware attack. I want to say that was in 22 or 23. And so there had just been a certain amount of volatility in the publishing space and in Baker & Taylor's space for a while. Their reputation as such a long-standing company was so good, I think most of us were willing to just ride out. These are things that aren't Baker & Taylor's fault. It's not Baker & Taylor's fault that the price of paper shot up so much in, you know, 21, that even into 22 and 23, we were still having delays on receiving materials. But this summer, it really started to crank up. There was issues with Hachette, which is one of the biggest book publishers in America, and they own a million tiny, smaller imprints. Hachette was not delivering things to Baker & Taylor in a timely fashion. They had essentially been told that we will fulfill our orders to Amazon first. We will fulfill our orders to like a Barnes & Noble or an indie bookstore through Ingram, through other distribution channels. You guys can have, Baker & Taylor can have what's left if there's enough. And that was a big step back for a lot of libraries where we were like, something is going really wrong here. But Baker & Taylor was extremely tight-lipped about it. We would ask our rep, and you know, he would just say, "Oh, it's just a thing going on with the publisher. Essentially, it's not on us; it's the publisher." And it wasn't until recently, you know, in the maybe month leading up to the ReaderLink sale, that we started to really notice. Yeah, we're not getting things a week or two late, or even we're getting things a month or 2 months after they're being published. Something is going wrong. And then they announced the ReaderLink sale, and we thought, oh, okay, they're going to sell to another company. You know, they'll keep on going the way they always have been. And the day that ReaderLink sale fell apart at the last minute was, I think, when librarians across the country really stopped in their tracks and said, what on God's green earth is going wrong at Baker & Taylor that this sale is being canceled at the last minute. That was the biggest red flag. And from there, I mean, Baker & Taylor was very tight-lipped. You had employees on Reddit trying to get like the secret word out, or you know, people were hearing things from their sales reps saying all my coworkers have been laid off, my boss has been laid off. There was some news media, the facility in Moments, which was Baker & Taylor's main warehouse, laid off I think 80% of their warehouse staff. So that was absolutely when you realize this is all, the wheels have come off this car. And we didn't know until, you know, that ReaderLink sale fell through in September.
Wow. You know, Sarah, one thing I don't know that we've really gotten into yet is that as so many bad business stories in American life are these days, private equity is part of the story here. Can you talk about the sort of, years and years of problems and acquisitions and divestments that have happened to Baker & Taylor before we got to this? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it had been, Baker & Taylor had been sold in 2019, I believe, to a firm that has just, is diversified into a million things. And that was again, an odd choice. How did you end up buying this company? And then essentially, how did you end up buying it, this company for that was 200 years old and running it into the ground in, you know, 5 years, 6 years? And I, without knowing the details of what was going on in there, all I've heard are the things that have come out, that there were problems with the CEO, who was a relative of someone, you know, that owned the private entity company, that there were problems, bills just weren't getting paid. And that's why publishers stopped giving them books. They weren't getting paid for what they'd already given them. Why would they give them more? And I think it just shows that in any industry, there are intricacies. There are things you have to understand about how that industry moves and operates. You can't just shove any CEO with no library, book publishing, warehousing, distribution experience into a company like Baker & Taylor and have it continue to run as it always has. But like I said, that's what I've heard from the people that I've spoken to.
All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the shutdown of a company called Baker & Taylor, nearly 200 years old. It supplied libraries with books, not just books, but books ready to be used in libraries with catalog information and those slick plastic covers that make them more durable. And we're talking about what the consequences of this could mean for your local library. My guests are Claire Woodcock, a writer and journalist who wrote about this for 404 Media, and Sarah Stumpf, who is the adult collection management librarian at the Rockford Public Library. We're going to take a break here, but we will continue this conversation in just a moment. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking for the first part of our program today about the closure of a book distributor called Baker & Taylor and how libraries in Illinois and across the country are feeling the effects of that. My guests are Sarah Stumpf, a librarian at the Rockford Public Library, and Claire Woodcock, who wrote about the shutdown for the technology news website 404 Media. In order to make our schedules meet, we taped this conversation ahead of time, so no calls for this, but you can let us know what you thought. Talk at 21stshow.org is our email address. Talk at 21stshow.org. All right, let's pick up right where we left off with Claire.
You know, the librarians that I spoke with, who a lot of them had already kind of jumped ship by the time that they talked with me, they all sort of said, you know, like, we want this company to succeed. This has been a good company for so long. We want them to come out on top of this. But again, when the ReaderLink deal fell through, they were like, okay, this is not, we can't justify our spending our budgets on this. There were library directors who were, you know, they would see their orders over the summer on pre-order for books that should reasonably be pre-ordered. They would come out and then they would be on back order, and the books never came.
Yeah, we had that exact situation happen with us. It wasn't until after the ReaderLink sale fell apart, we started looking harder. Yeah, we had ordered Kamala Harris's 107 Days. It was October and we hadn't received it at all. And we're like, wait, this is a major bestseller from a big political candidate. Our standard big name authors, Patterson, Steele, Leon Childs, you know, we weren't getting big name releases that we had pre-ordered for months. It just, they weren't showing up at all. And that, you know, that kind of a hard look is hard for libraries to constantly be doing. I understand how you didn't immediately clock that and just say, oh, there's been a little delay. Oh, it's been a bad couple of months. Oh, we had to work out some little thing. But that's sort of the perils of a lot of outsourcing operations. You know, once you've outsourced so much of that labor and you've come to depend on that outsourced company to provide it for you, we've really had to try to think outside the box here in Rockford about not only how do we get books and how do we process them, but how do we explain this to the public? Because all they're seeing is, wait, why can't I get a James Patterson book? Or wait, yeah, you don't have the Ozzy Osbourne book? You know, that one blew up huge. The big titles we just didn't have. We couldn't get from them. And that was a real shocker, you know, when that ReaderLink sale fell apart. Because I think we were really depending on ReaderLink was going to come in and clean house and fix whatever was wrong. And when that fell apart, the entire library profession, like I said, Baker & Taylor had their hands in a lot of things. I would estimate that, you know, up to 50% of American libraries were using some form of Baker and Taylor product or process somewhere in their line. And then to try to jump to another company, we're still trying to figure out exactly where everything is going to come from and how we're going to replace those things that we had depended on Baker and Taylor for. I have been working in libraries for 18 years now as a professional librarian with a master's degree. And the entire time I've been doing purchasing, I have always worked with Baker and Taylor systems. I have done other systems as well, but Baker and Taylor was a backbone at multiple libraries and library districts. I've worked at multiple branches around the state. Everybody used B&T for something. And now we're having to go back to jump, to relearn the skills that we don't have because we outsource them, and to refigure out how to make a manageable workflow out of this.
Well, let's ask about then. So Claire Woodcock, what are libraries trying to do to fill the void left by this closure?
Well, I mean, from my understanding, is they're trying to find a new distributor. Like Sarah said, a lot of libraries have existing accounts with one or more other competitors. It's not like there are many in this space, but one of the things that they've been doing is trying to go to existing accounts, being like, hey, remember me, I exist. The problem is that if so many of these places are doing that, then, you know, the workers at Ingram, or the workers at Brodart, they're all being overwhelmed with this, which is causing more shipping delays. Now I know a couple of other smaller places have come up. One bigger player over the summer started to emerge. Amazon has made the announcement that they are entering their business vendor division. They have announced that they're creating a library specific hub, and they're advertising these really steep discounts on cover price, which is kind of like deja vu if you remember back when Amazon first started selling books to individual consumers. You could get those books for, if you could get them for $28 or $30 at your local independent bookstore, they could be like $22, $19 at Amazon. And it seems like they're advertising sort of the same thing. And I think what's particularly interesting about that is that from what I understand is libraries are used to paying more for the cover price, whether it's a physical or digital copy, but those are different formats with different pricing models, just to be clear. But libraries have traditionally paid more for an institutional copy of a book because it's likely to be used by more than one consumer and like dozens, if not hundreds of people reading that new Kamala Harris book or the James Patterson book. And, you know, some of those readers might go and buy the book for their personal collections, but publishers can then, they're seeing it as a lost sale. So libraries are paying a little bit more for those copies so they can get more readership. So for Amazon to be offering these steep discounts to libraries right now, and it's not new for a library to go get a book off of Amazon quickly if they really need it and they're in a pinch. But offering these steep discounts to libraries net right now definitely makes me wonder who's making up that difference and like here and how.
Well, that's how they get you, right? Low prices. You get the first taste for free. Sarah, what's Rockford doing to try and weather this storm?
So our biggest turn right now for these big name things was Amazon. Quite honestly, we hopped on Amazon and tried to get as much as we could get. That we could reasonably catalog in-house for the things that we should have had yesterday.
And when you say Amazon, you're not talking about this special library division. You're just going like I would, click, 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 and having the book shipped to the library?
Both. So I am just click, click, clicking like if I was buying, you know, cat food in my living room. But then we also have been just sort of testing the waters a little on some of their services. With Amazon, the issue isn't so much the price point, it's what else are you going to give us? And cataloging records, the ability to make those cataloging records Amazon is now giving libraries what they call brief cataloging records, just a basic, here's the name, here's the author, here's the year. You know, these are not full, well-made professional cataloging records. They're little stubs we use so that people can start placing holds on their newest, hottest thing 3 months before it comes out. So Amazon is getting into those sorts of library services. So we've been playing around a little bit with that. We're trying to increase our relationship with an existing vendor we already have, which was Brodart. They had all of our children's business, and so we're in talks with them to take a chunk, if not all, if they could handle it, of our adult business. But those are conversations that are ongoing with Brodart. We just had a meeting with them yesterday, and they picked up two new people on their team straight from Baker and Taylor. So there, it seems that the bigger vendors like Brodart or Ingram are going to be picking up some of these laid off people that used to work at B&T to, you know, try to accommodate demand. And we're still hoping that we can get more of the professional library service we're accustomed to from Brodart. For now, Amazon is plugging holes in the wall, quite honestly, so we can have something. And then we're also trying to get in with Ingram, which is a very large distributor. They distribute mostly to bookstores, and trying to get in with them as well to see if we can be purchasing things from them. But again, it's the fact that it's not just getting the book, it's getting all the things done to the book. It's kind of, if you know the story of the Little Red Hen, it's, you know, you buy all the, I buy ingredients for library books. I buy a book, I buy there, we pay for the cover, we pay for the stamping, whatever. We don't, and when we open the box, we have bread. Someone made the bread. We didn't make the bread. Now we're trying to find out who are the vendors that make bread. I know how to buy bags of flour. I know how to, you know, in theory, I can mix it up, but I can't make this much bread, man. My arms are going to fall off from stirring those bowls. We don't have enough hours in the week to process all the books we would have. So it's really going to be a question of who in the library world can take this business. This is a giant opportunity for those companies like Brodart and Ingram, and who will see what Amazon is offering as well, quite honestly.
I appreciate the artisanal sprouted metaphor you employed there. we're coming to the end of our time together. Claire, how does this, what we've been talking about, how does that fit into the bigger picture of some of the other challenges libraries have been up against?
I mean, when I first heard about the news on Reddit, I thought this is exactly what libraries don't need. Because, you know, as the popularity of libraries is increasing, they're under more and more threat. And, you know, I started to report on libraries back in, you know, like 2021. And just what started as kind of a niche topic of like, oh, maybe this is kind of nerdy or whatever. Now all of the people that I know in my communities, they all have library cards. They're using their libraries to, you know, get, you know, like sewing materials or seeds for their garden or tools. So there's a lot more people that are actually taking advantage of their libraries. I think that there's like a desire to be more self-sufficient. I think that there's huge economic strains that people are dealing with their individuals and families. So when those types of things happen, we turn to our libraries for support. And so libraries have like boomed in popularity. People love their libraries right now. And I think all of that to say is when people can't get access to the things that they expect that they would be able to get from their library, people start to get confused. And one of the main reasons people use their library is, you know, they realize that they don't need to necessarily buy everything that they want. They can borrow it. And we've seen that in consumer spending habits that are changing over the years. And plus, in an increasingly surveilled society, I think people do want to create more friction between the companies that have poor data privacy practices. And, you know, intellectual privacy is this ability to consume media and culture that helps you formulate your own belief systems, and people have the right to test those ideas and theories without feeling like government or corporations are listening to you and keeping tabs on everything that you're doing. Libraries aspire to protect their patrons' browsing and borrowing habits the best that they can. Not always achievable, but that is the goal. I think one of the things is whenever I publish a story and I get to read the comments, it's usually like somebody has synthesized what I spent 1,000 words trying to say into like 2 sentences. And I'm like, I love that that was your takeaway. I wish that I could have been that succinct. but one of the things is like, someone just said, you know, like you just have to wonder how long before certain books just can't be sourced. And I've been reporting on book challenges and censorship for a while now, particularly this access to young adult titles by people who come from different backgrounds and they tell their stories about different lived realities. And, you know, like looking at all of these different restrictions, these state laws that are restricting what books can be brought into classrooms and school libraries and public libraries, how they're creating banned book deserts, similar to how you might think of a childcare desert or a local news desert, where unless you have the money and the means to order a copy of the book you want to read that's being restricted, you might not be able to access it. So there's definitely these censorship proponents that would say, this book doesn't belong in a public or school library. If anyone wants to read it, they can just go buy a copy. But aside from the fact that not everyone can afford to just go buy every piece of media they want exposure to, what happens when one, two, or more of a handful of library book distributors aren't sourcing certain books based on the keywords they contain? Like, some days I think we're further from that reality than we actually are, and others I think it's just around the corner when it's not. But you know, this is what happens when you don't have a lot of healthy competition in any given marketplace. Mm.
Seems to me we are definitely living in a Murphy's Law timeline where if something can go the bad way, it probably will. Sarah Stumpf, last question to you. For the average library consumer, why does this matter?
This matters because you're going to walk into your average library and that new shelf you see probably near the door is going to be mighty slim pickings here for the next couple of months. It means that if you are on hold, if you're the type of a user who places holds through your library where they say, hey, the next time we get this returned, it's going to come to you, that time that you spend on hold is about to get a lot longer. Maybe you think to yourself, oh, hey, you know what? This is a good time for me to jump into ebooks. And you're going to get your library's ebook app and you're going to get a bunch of ebooks. That is great, but ebook copies cost us so much more than a physical print copy does. You'd think it wouldn't be that way. That is the way that it works. And those are licenses that expire. I can buy you one copy of a James Patterson novel in ebook. I get 26 circs or 2 years. That's it. And whereas if I bought the same thing, I could buy you probably 6 copies of the hardcover for the same price, and they would last as long, you know, forever, as until they fall apart. So we're going to start seeing library budgets where there's more pressure on ebook usage, which is going to shoot up costs, which nobody wants to be paying more and essentially getting less, but that's probably what's going to be happening. As far as I would say for average library users, if any of them are listening right now, please be patient with your local libraries. We are doing the best we can. And maybe this is a time to investigate something that isn't new. Maybe this is a time to browse a little bit more deeper or try something you've never tried or wouldn't normally pick up that we already do have. I mean, libraries have a lot of great books, but I would say for probably the next 3 to 6 months, getting new releases is going to get sticky for a lot of people in a lot of places. Please be patient with us. We're doing our best.
It's a good time to get lost in the stacks. Sarah Stumpf is a librarian at the Rockford Public Library. Claire Woodcock wrote about the shutdown of Baker & Taylor for the technology news website 404 Media. Thank you both so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we need to take another break. More 21st Show when we return. Stay with us.